back! 6 o'clock! Get online! Move up on me! Online on me!
01, this is 05. We have effective fire on our position.
About to get fucking weird, bro.
Welcome to Hero Games Podcast, episode 16. I'm your host, JD, and I'm here tonight with my co-host, Willie, and a return guest from episode 11, Zach Garner. You guys might remember Zach. Pretty amazing story. I'll say that it was trauma-filled. We'll get into the nuance of that in a little while, but tonight we're here to talk about the upside of things. Life is all about ebb and flow. And right now, Zach is ebbing or flowing. We're not really sure which one is the good one, but he's on the good one right now. So
The uptick.
He's on the uptick, baby. So welcome, Zach.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
It's good to have you, man. Drove yourself here from Louisiana.
Good old Baton Rouge.
Baton Rouge, man.
Go Tigers.
I've been to Louisiana.
Where? JRTC?
JRTC, dude. Hey, man. Look, when I tell people my JRTC story, they're like, bro, this sounds like you were in combat out there.
Is this where you got ran over?
Yeah, where I broke my leg.
Mm-hmm.
That place is wild, dude.
Weren't you in JROTC?
Dude, when I was in high school, I was in junior whatever ROTC is. Reserve Officer Training Corps in high school,
sounds
dude.
Sounds good.
Well, obviously, it was for the girls. you want to see some of my JROTC memorabilia?
I would like to see that.
I'll show you later.
Oh.
I don't have it. But you can come over. You can come over to the house. Ironically, this is wild because I was in JROTC when I was like 16. We wore green berets.
Really?
Yes. I was looking through my stuff like 5 years ago and I was like, what is this weird looking unshaped green beret with this wild flash? Freaking JROTC, dude.
Special Operations JROTC.
It was. I was on the Ranger team, the Raider team. Huh. It's a thing, man.
It's like they were confused whether they were SF, Marines, or...
We just wore it all, dude. Yeah. We had the Green Beret, the Raider tab. I'm not kidding you. This is serious.
Did y'all go to, like, Pickett?
We did go to Fort Pickett and do the Raider Challenge.
Man.
Some of my proudest moments.
Add that to your resume.
It's already written in. Yeah.
Put it on your LinkedIn page.
So Baton Rouge, you made it. Thanks for coming out, dude. You're here for to serve as cadre for the youth survival course.
Brought my 16-year-old with.
Yeah.
Yeah. She got grounded, and so she volunteered to come be one of the senior participants of the youth challenge. Or the youth survival course. Yeah, this isn't a challenge.
You obviously don't even know what you're here for.
Sorry. Edit that out.
Yeah, man, stoked to do that. So last time you were on here again, we talked about how you were run over by vehicles, TBI, and you were med boarded from the Army for traumatic brain injury. After that, you rode a bicycle across the country successfully, and then on a shorter bike ride got run over by a car, and then you went through some pretty serious stuff with flesh-eating bacteria, which put you under for a year and a half. Man, you look good, man. You look like you're back.
I feel pretty good. Yeah, I all in all, throughout that I lost about 55 pounds of weight, and you know, the surgery, so it started in June of 2020. The last related surgery to all that was in May of 22. So really a solid 23 months of just nonstop surgeries and recovery periods. So now I'm definitely on the uptick and starting to enjoy life and push the limits again. And that feels good.
Yeah, dude. In this episode, we're going to talk about what that uptick looks like for you. You just completed the 7X project. You went to Saipan for a MIA recovery operation, and you have some other things on the horizon. Then also, we're going to talk about some mental health stuff. And I think we should also talk about future plans with you and I.
Mm-hmm.
We're building the Survival Center of Excellence on the East Coast.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Willie, that's serious. So actually, we did talk about this a couple months ago.
Yeah.
We'll talk in depth about that in a little while.
Once we're going to buy the state of Virginia.
Yeah. We got to change the flag, man. Like the single breast hanging out, it's...
You need two.
I do appreciate you saying it needs two. That's funny. So where to start, man?
Well, let's see. It was it April of 22 when I came through last time? I think so.
April, May.
Yeah.
You were there for the Mountain Survival Challenge.
And it opened a lot of doors. You know, once I had been told for a while that I needed to share my story, and I struggled to figure out how to, because I wasn't sure how to talk about it. And in my head, I had all sorts of internal dialogue that, does anybody care? Do I have a story to share? And I just felt weird about it. But because you were my friend and you asked me to, and I respect you on most days, I decided to come on your podcast and start opening up and sharing what that looked like. And little did I know the doors that it would open. You know, it was a couple weeks after that, I got a call to be on another podcast. And then after that, another one. And then from there, things just really started to pick up. And you know, it's awesome to do things like this, and I still have days that I question, like, am I the right person to be doing this, do I deserve to have a platform to share my experience with everyone else? And then you have somebody that reaches out and says, hey, you know, either this podcast resonated with me, or this thing that you said resonated with me, and it just confirms that I'm doing what I want to do. Because at the end of the day, while I was laying in the hospital and I thought, what's next? You know, up until that point, since I was 18 years old, my living was made off going overseas and taking the fight to the bad guys. And I knew that probably wasn't going to be an option anymore. And I was trying to figure out where I wanted to go. And it just kind of found me. And once, while I was laying there, I said to my wife, I was like, I just want to make the path easier for the next guy. So whatever that looks like, whether that's somebody that is joining the military or going to selection or fighting in a hospital to stay alive, or they're depressed, they have anxiety, whatever that case may be, I want to share everything I've learned through retrospect and give them the answer that worked for me, in hopes that they don't have to struggle, this at least not the same struggles that I went through.
I remember when I was going through difficult times, and you know, I'm feeling pretty good right now. You know, I have some stressors in my life, but nothing major. But I remember thinking that, like, dude, has someone been through this that can help me? Can someone please tell me that you've been through this and this is how you got out of it? Or just tell me that you can see light, because I don't see light right now.
Yeah. I definitely had those moments where there wasn't a lot of light. And you know, I went through months in the hospital where I was having surgery every 3 or 4 days and wasn't like, I remember bits and pieces of it, but it's all like 3 or 4 months of it is like a complete blur because anesthesia, narcotics, everything was a big factor. But I got to the point where I just didn't want to fight anymore. And I remember laying in bed and just praying, like, just let me fall asleep tonight and not wake up tomorrow. And then you wake up the next day and it almost feels like a letdown. Like, instead of being grateful, like, I survived the night, I was like, shit, we have to do this again today. And eventually, you get sick of being let down. So you find a way to change your mindset around it. And that's when the work really began, was after I realized, like, I can keep going to bed miserable and praying that I don't have to wake up and do it tomorrow, but I keep waking up. So what can I control? And that was when I started really doing the work to shift my mindset, not just, you know, talk positively to myself, but actually rewire the way my brain soaked up everything that was going on and turn that into a positive thing.
As I think about that time and look inward, I was also going through my own struggles at the same time. And dude, I regret, and I want to take accountability right now. And we've talked about this, but I just wish I had acknowledged that you were struggling that much. We look at our buddies and we're like, dude, it's Zach. He's fucking good, dude. He doesn't need me. I mean, sure, he needs people, right? But the dude's good. We planned a trip to come up and see you in Boston that fell through because of my work schedule. And I remember telling her, like, yeah, I'm bummed about it, but Zach's good. He's fucking hard. He's Zach. He's good. I should have dove a little deeper there, man, you know? And so, fortunately, here you are, and everything's great. And I, you know, you gave me the opportunity to still stick around, you know. After now, I kind of honestly feel like I should have been there more, man. But we become consumed with our own lives. So it's a lesson learned for me as well, you know. And I would say to other people who have friends, don't give them the benefit of the doubt always. I think that's a problem sometimes, is we're like, hey, yeah, Andy's fucking hard. He's not going to kill himself. You know, fucking mm-hmm. JD's hard. He's not going to kill himself. Meanwhile, you know, we are.
We're real good at hiding it.
Yeah, bro. So don't check on your tough friends, man. Seriously.
For sure.
Because I had no idea. I would have never thought that you were in such a dark place. Because every time I talk to you on the phone, be like, yeah, dude, I've got like this weird shit in my leg, but I'm getting a surgery tomorrow. I'm like, oh, yeah, dude, Kayla, Zach, they're, Zach's in a weird place. He's getting some surgery and shit, but he says he's going to like do a race in 6 months. So I think he's good. You know? Like, he's going to climb Everest. He's going to climb Everest.
That'd be awesome. That's next year.
Yeah. So we personally are guilty of not acknowledging when we're down, which is our fault. I probably should have told people when I was down.
Yeah. Pride definitely kicks in, and you know, whether it's ego or whatever it is, it's, we don't want to admit that things bother us, and we don't want to burden those around us with it. And so we learn to just internalize and compartmentalize, and eventually it all builds up and nobody knows when that perfect storm's going to happen, but you gotta do something about it. Otherwise, it's gonna come out. It's gonna erupt, and it ain't gonna be pretty.
So, for you sitting in the hospital, that to me is very clear why that would be depressing and weigh on you. But once you got out of the hospital and you continued to kind of deal with some mental health issues, and when I say that, I mean like feeling shitty.
Mm-hmm.
What was that like day to day? Were you still waking up, even though you could walk and move around and go to the gym and do whatever, were you still waking up and going, fuck?
Yeah, because it wasn't as fast as I wanted. It wasn't like I got out of the hospital and was able to get right back to it. I tried that approach, and turns out that when the infection got into my bones, it started chewing tendons off. And so I went into the gym and tried to do what I used to do. And like a month after spending 6 months in the hospital, I got out and started going to the gym, and then things just started popping off the bones. And so then there's reparative surgeries and everything. So it was a very long process to get back, about a year and a half of repair procedures with like a month to 2 months between each one. And, you know, having to then slowly ease back into things, which is like, it's hard to swallow your pride and go to the gym and do 10-pound dumbbell curls while everyone else is curling 55s. You know, it takes a toll on you, and the process just wasn't happening as fast as I wanted it to. And then I didn't know if I was ever going to be back to where I was, and it was a lot of unknown territory. I had become really secure in certain skill sets that was how I provided for myself and my family for years, since I was 18 years old. And I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do those types of things anymore. And so there was just a lot of fear too, and that definitely played into it. So, and then a lot of self-induced stuff, because I was in that dark place, I was making decisions that I shouldn't be making, and self-induced stress came from all that. I don't really know once I got out of the hospital, like in the hospital, I prayed to die, kept waking up, decided something needed to change, got out of the hospital, and then things still weren't going good, so I went back into that dark place. I don't really know what the defining moment was that got me out of that, but it was probably coming on this podcast and then getting feedback from people and people telling me like, hey, this is an awesome story. And then I didn't want to be a fraud. So I was like, shit, I actually got to live this now. I can't. To be honest, when we recorded the last podcast, there was probably a part of me that was still covering up. And then when it was received well and people started reaching out and more people started asking me to come share my story on their platform, then it was like, oh, well, I want to actually live this then. So it's time to do some more work. And yeah, the world just kept pointing me, kept telling me that I was going in the right direction. So that's probably what got me out of it was you.
No way, dude. Do you remember when you were out of the hospital and you were living your day-to-day, jacking 10-pound dumbbells, which, what, you're doing 15s now, right?
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
If I'm feeling good, I might do 17 and a half.
Hell yeah.
Right?
Hell yeah.
Dude, vulnerability moment coming in here. Like, I'm 37 and, you know, almost 20 years into a career, and I feel very much inadequate some days because getting older is hard. We're really hard on ourselves. We really are. Mm-hmm. We're really hard on ourselves. And, you know, I have people that remind me sometimes because we refuse to take excuses. You know, I'll be reminded by her that, you know, I'm just a few years removed from breaking my leg and all the trauma that came in other ways with that as well. And for me, I never acknowledge that. I just don't acknowledge that, you know, that literally 2 years ago, I couldn't run a mile, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even now, I don't acknowledge that's why I'm not where I should be, because in my mind, it's like, hey, just just fucking just get back to where you should be, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You will never be back to where you were before that. How do you cope with that? Like, even I'm asking you, like, how do I cope with that? How do we cope with getting older, entering a new chapter in life, not being what we expect to be?
I just had this conversation recently with somebody, and I just find the littlest things to be grateful for. And, you know, at one point, I wasn't allowed to get out of bed, and they had to set an alarm on the bed so that if I did get out of bed, it started going off and the doctors came in and yelled at me because they didn't want me getting out of bed, but I didn't listen well. And so I think about those days and how much effort it took once I was able to get out of bed just to go walk a lap around the hallways in the hospital. And then getting out of the hospital and just taking a walk around the block outside. And then I needed more surgery and was in a full leg cast for 2 months and couldn't leave my house. I think about those days. And so it's like, even if I am going out and I want to run 3 miles, but after a mile and a half, my body or my legs saying, hey, this isn't a good idea today, instead of beating myself up that I can't run 3 miles or 5 miles or whatever the case may be, I'm just grateful that I'm not in that place anymore. I think about how far I've come in regards to that. So, and don't forget and don't downplay what you have been through. You know, I think society nowadays, a lot of people overplay because it gives them an excuse to do less now. And guys from our community, though, we downplay what we did. And I don't know what the reason is behind why we do that, but it's a common theme. I think partially it's because it's just what we've lived it. Like, to someone else hearing some of our stories, like us telling stories before we started this podcast tonight, to someone outside, some of those stories might sound absolutely nuts, but to us, it was just the life that we've lived. And so it doesn't sound, and it doesn't feel as wild to us because we were there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get it, man.
So just show yourself grace for what you've done, what you've been through. Don't overplay it and use it as an excuse, but accept that you've been through some shit too.
Yeah, I think that's good advice for anybody.
Yeah, I'll tell you a funny story relating to, you know, dealing with trauma, depression. I was about 25 years old. Yeah, about 25 years old. And JD here, this will resonate in my brain for probably the rest of my life. Got me through some really tough fucking times. But me and JD were playing Ghost Recon Wildlands. We accidentally beat the game and didn't know it. But anyways, I was sitting in a basement playing it. We were playing it. This was when he was dealing with his injury. And that was kind of I don't think both of us realized at the time, it was super important that we were doing this. You know, he had somebody to play video games with, and I had somebody to talk to. I probably have never even told him this, but who cares? But he said something to me that, and you could probably contest to this, all of us probably contest to this, when you're going through that trauma, that experience where life kicks you in the nuts and testing to see how manly you are, or whatever you want to call it. It just feels like a giant hurricane over top of you and everything's dark and it's raining on you and you can't get out of the rain. Well, simple little phrase, few words here that JD told me really changed my whole entire life in a blink of an eye. He said, so what? Whatever. That those three words changed my life. Changed my life to the point where I'm a Green Beret now. Like, always wanted to be, went through a bunch of stuff, didn't think I'd become one. Here I am now, sitting in a room with multiple Green Berets. So I think, like, to contest to what we were talking about right now, like, yeah, you know, a lot of people are going through the same stuff we are. A lot of people are going different dichotomies of trauma and levels of it. But when you open up, I think having an open mind, accepting the fact that it does matter, but it doesn't, if that makes sense. Like, so what? Whatever. I'll get through this. Just have an open mind of realize, like you said, you don't take anything for granted anymore. Like, probably you walking out, walking with your kids, you know, doesn't matter. Like, so what? Whatever. And that really did. It's catapulted me through a bunch of tough times. I remember in selection, I was like, yo, this sucks. I do not want to do this. And I was reminded of that day of like, so what, whatever. I told everybody I went through selection with, so what, whatever, dude. Like, we'll get through this. I've been using that. I should probably get tattooed on me, on my forehead. But like, it's simple words that, like, you never know when you need to hear something. And I heard it that day, you know. I know somebody upstairs told me it, was looking out for me, and so happened to be that JD was a messenger. But, you know, you never know when that moment comes where you need to hear what you need to hear. And it's up to you to be open-minded and accept it.
Yeah.
So.
To build that out a little bit, my man here had graduated college. National champion, JMU.
2015 national champion. So what?
Whatever. For what?
Rugby.
Yeah. You didn't know that, did
Impressive.
You?
Impressive.
I have the I actually have, if anybody's listening, don't care, I have that national championship trophy in the base of my dad's house. So
it's about to be in this podcast.
It's about to be in this podcast room.
Somehow we're gonna attach your microphone to it.
Yeah.
So he had graduated college, and the timeline ain't going to be perfect. Who cares? Graduated college. It took him 17 years to graduate college.
18, actually. Thanks for, like, helping me out.
And he got, like, an interdisciplinary degree as whack. So he graduates, and he's at a New Year's Eve party.
No. I was 21 when this happened. What you're about to say.
Told you the timeline was going to be off.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, what I'm about to tell you about New Year's Eve.
Willie.
Derailed Willie. He had a box of
Milk Duds.
Milk Duds in his
left hand.
And he's dancing.
Wasn't even drunk, had one beer.
And so he's dancing, he's feeling the music. It's that new Katy Perry that had just come out. You know it. And pew, my man gets shot.
I remember this story.
He gets shot. The Milk Duds, surprisingly, Milk Duds are actually Kevlar lined, the boxes.
Deflected the bullet.
It's not true. No, but his hand is in front of his stomach. The round enters his hand instead of his stomach, travels up into his elbow, and lodges itself in there. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, I tell people all the time, I was 1 inch from shitting my pants and nothing happened to me, or 1 inch away from being dead.
Yeah.
Big time.
I don't really know what you meant by the shit in your pants, but I get it.
You get, like, what I'm saying.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Just dodged a bullet.
Now I get it. Anyway, he's rushed to the hospital. I mean, look at his hand now. It's
all jacked up.
It's not normal.
So is this one not good either?
So he had gone to the recruiter, and actually he had gone to multiple recruiters, and they had all told him no. So to wrap this up so that this ain't a podcast about JD and Willie, it was dead in the water for a while. And then I called him one day because whenever I work out, I get ideas, dude. And I just roll with it, dude. I pull a whiteboard out into the garage and I'll, you know, do three reps.
He puts on these glasses as well.
Yeah. Of bench press. And I'll go over and I'll, you know, come up with a whiz bang idea. And I was like, I'm getting chased in the army. I'm sick of this shit. This motherfucker's dragging his feet. Obviously he wasn't. He got shot. And was told no by a lot of people. So I called him that day and I remember having a long conversation with you, like, dude, trust me, there's a way. Once you're a Green Beret, you'll really know that, like, we can fucking do anything. So we're gonna get you in the army. And then we did. We ended up it started with calling the Surgeon General's office. And then working with a lot of dumb recruiters. But we got him in, and I mean, look at him now.
Long story short, to prove that I was worthy of the being in the army, I just had to prove that I could do a push up. And I cranked out 100.
Dude, the whole system to get into the army with a waiver is whack. And nonetheless, we experienced that. We got Willie into the army. And so two things that I'll say. One, I appreciate you saying that about me. That day, the whole so what thing is very similar to what Jocko says about good. Hey, no one gives a shit about your little problem. Like, so what, dude? Get through it. So what, right? Jocko says good, which is, hey, good that this happened to me. I can take it and turn it into something good. And so it's all the same thing, man, just a reword on things. And then The second thing that I'll acknowledge is that you said that I helped you with that podcast, and man, I appreciate that. It means a lot to me. I didn't mean to dismiss that. I just don't feel like, here we go again, you know, that was actually something I was responsible for, but I appreciate that. And it's good to see you in a better place.
It's good to be in a better place.
So what?
So what, whatever.
Yeah, so what, you're doing well, dude. Go do shitty.
Go fuck something.
Go fuck yourself, dude.
This is just proving why these topics are so hard for us to deal with.
So. Well, obviously, yeah, we don't take things too seriously a lot of the time, and then it's tough for us to talk serious about our emotions. We have to shroud it in jokes. So we're laughing and crying. You ready to move on to starting to talk about some of the flows?
Yeah.
So you've been through a lot of adversity and now you're on a high point. Like we said earlier, 7X challenge, going to Saipan. Let's dive into this.
Yeah. So after coming up and being a guest on episode 11, I started getting more podcast requests or invitations to come share my story. And I ended up doing one that was under Black Rifle Coffee Company's podcast production team, the Medevac podcast, which is all about resilience and recovery and rescue, and shared my story on there. And, you know, as time went on, I allowed myself to be more vulnerable because I saw that that's what really resonated with people well, was when they hear someone else talk about the low points. You know, everybody loves a success story, but sometimes people need to hear that they're just not alone in this place. And so I started really opening up about some of the not so glamorous side of it and going into some of the more gritty details of that whole time. And one of the hosts from that podcast called me a couple weeks afterwards and said, hey, I got something I think you might want to be involved in, and pitched it to me. It was called the 7X Human Performance Project, and said, yeah, we're taking a group and we're going to skydive, run, and swim on all 7 continents in 7 days. So we had a team of skydivers. We had a team of runners that were running a marathon every day, and then combined we found some sort of water source to jump into so we could say we also swim on all the continents. I'm gonna throw the disclaimer out there right now. I'm not a free fall license guy, so I tandem jumped, and then I didn't run a marathon because my body was not ready for that. And that was my response when he told me about this. I was like, man, that sounds awesome. I can't do any of it. But I was really interested, and they were like, well, we kind of want you to come along on this, so let's figure out a way that you can come. And so I did kind of I was like a hybrid athlete for the whole thing. I wouldn't even use the word athlete because I didn't do all seven of anything. Well, I ran on all seven. So another disclaimer, Antarctica, we had some bad weather, couldn't fly in. So we had to do that piece in South Africa, but we're going back to Antarctica in November to check that off the block. But we still did seven of everything. But we had to do the Antarctica piece in Cape Town. So I ran all seven places, six continents, but different distances. Some shorter, some still short, but not as short.
I heard you ran 25 meters in one of the continents.
No, I ran at least a mile. I ran at least a mile on everyone. But I had to work with where my body was. And honestly, that was kind of a little bit of a mental struggle in itself, because I was like, I don't like doing anything half-assed, but I didn't want to miss this opportunity. There is, you know, one, it just sounds cool. Like, I'm going to get to go see the entire world in 7 days. That's amazing in itself. And then I was really curious about the other people that were going to be coming on this. And yeah, so they invited me on it. I quit my previous job and started fundraising full time, spreading awareness about this project, because it was a really cool concept. It wasn't just let's go set this record, or let's take veterans on this once in a lifetime trip and they get to have a great week and then that's it. The idea behind it was, we're going to stimulate high levels of stress, physical, emotional, everything. And then we're going to have a medical staff that is going to study our recovery afterwards. And we're going to fine tune recovery processes, what works and what doesn't. And we're going to create a manual and a documentary that goes out. And 100% of the proceeds for the life of that manual and that documentary will go to the beneficiaries that we chose to support. So I really liked the concept of it, and so I just worked my ass off and raised awareness, did local fundraisers, and I got to go. And it was exactly that. It was the trip of a lifetime, but there were a lot of reasons that made it that I didn't anticipate. I knew we were going to be in cool places. I knew there was going to be cool people, and I knew we were going to be doing cool things. But the biggest thing that has stuck with me since then, and that was just in February, so 2 months ago, still everybody that was on that trip created such a tight bond and created this sense of tribe that we all still keep in touch on a daily basis. People are constantly posting pictures or updates of where they are in the world, where they're at in the U.S. If anybody's here, let's get together. I've had multiple people that I've met up with in the last 2 months even, that none of them live in Louisiana or anywhere near me. Dallas is probably where the closest people live. But I've connected with those people since then, because it was just such an experience together. You know, we were completely sleep deprived. You had an adrenaline rush and then a crash like every night. We had an international flight every single night. So there were just a lot of stress inducing factors going in and out of customs and checking in at the airport. I hate doing that stuff. But nobody really lost their cool. Like, everybody stayed pretty centered, and I attribute that to the people that were around, just like the energy, just everybody was just feeding off of each other, and it just motivated the hell out of me. And part of the reason why I wanted to go was I had done a couple podcasts sharing my story of getting out of the Army, getting hit by a car, getting this flesh-eating bacterial infection. But what next? Like, if the story ends there, then did I really overcome it or did I just give up? And I didn't want to say that I gave up. I kind of felt like if I didn't do something, that's what I was doing, was giving up. And so this gave me a sense of purpose again. And it gave me something new to talk about, something so that if somebody is in that dark space, they're not sure where their life's going to go after whatever has happened, there's always something. And you never know when it's going to hit you. You know, I don't know what I was doing that day. I was probably making like a microwave quesadilla. And Christian called me and said, hey, do you want to go on this epic trip? And yeah, it was... I mean, I still can't think of the words to describe it, but I can say for a fact that the people that were on that trip are what made it what it was for me.
A couple of things stood out there to me. One is, have you heard of Ernest Shackleton's expedition to Antarctica? He launched from Argentina, I believe. Is that right? Do you remember
that? It's called The Expedition. I have the book.
I'm going to have to borrow that.
It's, I have it. I'll give it to you. It's actually JD's, but it's mine now. But he, Argentina. I think it was the Falklands because England owned them at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had that war in the 80s.
So Shackleton intended to cross Antarctica on foot, but to launch from Argentina, make landfall in Antarctica, cross on foot. If that's inaccurate, then I don't care. But I'm pretty sure that's accurate. I actually just read the book last year, and I had a small book club on it. Don't worry about it. I'm sorry you weren't invited. It was just me and Willie.
And I can't even read.
He had the audio version.
It was a YouTube video. We watched it last night. So so what you said about the dynamic of the team stood out to me, because Ernest Shackleton said when he chose his team, and that was the most important thing, was that he had a crew that would always support each other. He would look past qualifications for people who would work well within the dynamic. And so none of his interviews lasted more than 5 minutes. He would sit down across from the person and he would quickly determine if this was someone that was tolerable and that could be stuck on a ship for a long period of time or an expedition of any sort.
Mm-hmm.
And if they would work within the dynamic of the team. And so it sounds like you identified that there was a great dynamic. Was that intentional? Was that accidental? Was that an environment that kind of pulled people in and kind of showed them, hey, you will act this way? If you act outside of this, then you're going to face some scrutiny.
Everybody was free to be themselves. I know that there were some people that were invited because they knew this person will be an asset to creating that dynamic. I don't want to speak for anyone, but the person that started this, Ryan Birdman Parrott, recently told me that was part of why he invited me on this trip, was because he knew that I would help add to that cohesiveness. And we had people from all walks of life. We had a lot of military, Navy SEALs, MARSOC, Green Berets, Rangers. Then we had extreme athletes, professional skydivers, wingsuit pilots, that. And then we just had people that wanted to support the cause and So we invited them to come take part in it because they helped financially support the mission. And so, yeah, it was people from all walks of life. But as soon as we landed, so we flew, most of us flew together from Atlanta to Cape Town, South Africa. And when we landed in Cape Town, it was in the evening, like 9 o'clock at night. We met in the conference room. They started doing kind of some basic introductions. And then it was like, okay, that's all we got for the night. But the bar at the hotel's open till 1. So go start getting to know each other. So we didn't have anything to do the next day other than prepping for the kickoff. So we sat at the bar and we just all started introducing ourselves and started kind of commingling. And that just really set the tone. Everybody started kind of sharing bits and pieces of their story, but then also we're on an international flight every night. We had this one guy on the plane. He was amazing. He was one of our VIPs that came along. And this guy, I'm pretty sure every continent we stopped on, he went to the duty free and bought like an entire bar's worth of booze. And then he sat in the first class section of the plane because we had this whole plane all to ourselves. And his seat was up in the first class section where the chairs go all the way back into like beds. I wasn't lucky enough to have one of those chairs, but he would like host a party and everybody would be up there just like hanging out every night. And then the next day we'd stop and he'd buy more booze and bring it on the plane. And so like, even though like we had stuff to do the next day, so we weren't necessarily partying, but we were up there getting to know each other, telling stories, finding out people's backgrounds, finding out about their families, where they're from, all that stuff. And then, you know, after like day 4 was when I really hit a wall, which was Cairo, and we skydived into the pyramids, which was really awesome. But I was feeling sick as hell that day and going downhill fast. And I never got tested, but after we got back to Dallas, I found out that a couple people tested positive for COVID. So I don't know if I had that or what. It only really took me out for like 24 hours. So I don't know if it was that, but I mean, I have survived a lot. So maybe I'm just immune. And I was breastfed till I was 4 years old. So I'm stronger than most people.
48.
Could you just take a moment to dive into that?
I don't know what to say. I mean, again, to me, I thought that was normal life. It apparently wasn't.
Do you think that's why, like, you are bald but are tall and have a good mustache?
Yeah, I'm like permanently going to look like a baby with facial hair.
Boss baby.
Yeah, I don't know why. I don't know my mom's thought process in that, but at some point in my life, like, I didn't even know, because I have no biological children of my own, so I don't even know what's normal breastfeeding time frame. But at some point I remember my mom said, oh yeah, Zach was breastfed till he was 4, and my wife was like, the fuck? And that's when I realized that wasn't normal. But hey, worked out.
It could be worse.
Yeah.
I was raised on the dairy, bitch.
Yeah. So maybe that had something to do with it. But anyways, I digress. I got to the point where I hit that wall. I was tired. I actually, this was the first time in my life this ever happened. I had sleep paralysis on the bus. So we were out at the pyramids all day long, and then on most continents, we had hotel rooms, and it was like just a place to like shower and like kind of refit your suitcases. We didn't have enough time there to actually sleep usually. But that night, we had a dinner cruise on the Nile before we had to be back to the airport for our flight to London. I opted to skip that, stay at the hotel and sleep for a couple hours. So I slept for like 2 hours. And then we got on buses to go from the hotel back to the airport. And on that bus, I fell asleep. And it was super trippy. I could hear everyone trying to wake me up, like, hey Zach, tapping me. I could feel it. My buddy gave me a sternum rub because he wasn't sure why I wasn't responding. I remember all of it, but I couldn't respond. I was like paralyzed. And then finally I shook out of it and was like, what was that? And my buddy told me, he was like, we've been trying to get you to respond for like 10 minutes. And then I was just like in a complete daze. But I got on the plane that night. I found some space on the floor, slept for like 6 hours on the way to London, and things got better from there. But yeah, everybody kind of hit that wall. I remember there was one guy that we almost got into a fight in Australia, and I walked away, and me and him are now friends. I knew he was frustrated with, you know, because things don't go as planned, and that's just life. Not everybody is as accustomed to adjusting on the fly as other people. And this guy was pretty frustrated with things. You know, our flight out of South, so Antarctica got canceled, then our flight out of South Africa was delayed. So we only had so much time in Australia, and he was just frustrated. And I happened to be around when he decided to voice that frustration, and I was the only person around. So I felt like it was coming at me, and all this was out of my control. So, you know, my initial instinct normally when somebody starts talking shit about something, like I'm passionate about this project at this point. Like, this is for a good cause. This isn't about us or this awesome trip. This is about the data that we're gathering that's going to be provided to the first responder and veteran communities to help give them the best recovery processes through emotional, spiritual, physical, mental toughness. And this dude's upset that the conditions haven't been perfect, and I was about to lose it. But I didn't want to say something and then be told, hey, Zach, we need you to fly back to America. You can't be on this trip. So I walked away. And when we landed in Dallas, that guy came up to me and he was like, hey, I owe you an apology. And I was like, you're good. And he was like, no, I lost sight of what this whole thing was about. And I took that out on you, and it wasn't your fault, but you handled it really well. And I was like, no one's ever said that to me before. I was like personally proud of myself, because normally my reaction would be to just lash out back. But I told him, I said, man, that says a lot about your character that, you know, this is now 6 days later and you're able to come to me and say like, hey, that was my bad. And I had a lot of respect for that guy for that. But that also goes to show you like how much of a bond that we built over through that hardship, you know. And I've said for a while now that hardship is the precursor to growth. It's like, if you really want to grow as a human being, go put yourself through some hardship, whether that's, you know, go to selection or go like sign up for a half marathon or ultra marathon or whatever seems hard to you, and don't be a bitch about it. Like, pick something that's hard and go put yourself through that. That's why, like, I love ice baths, is because it gives me a daily moment of hardship and the sense of accomplishment that comes after that. And it quiets everything down in my brain. And that's a whole nother conversation, but I feel like hardship stimulates growth, and everybody experienced hardship at some point in some way on that trip. And then we got to grow together at the same time.
Yeah, one of the questions that I was going to ask you is, what builds camaraderie? Man. And I feel like you're sort of saying
it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, experiencing hardship together. I mean, you guys can both attest to this, that, you know, after deployments, even the guys that you didn't like pre-deployment, the guys that, like, you knew you didn't like this guy, afterwards you had a little bit more of a bond with that guy because you guys went through that together. And if that, even, you know, if you're out in Destin and that guy gets into some shit and somebody's trying to start a fight, you're going to have his back because you guys went to war together. Or, you know, so, yeah.
So,
in a weird way, it's like a different level of trauma bonding. Like, there wasn't any real trauma other than being tired. Like, there wasn't any trauma that's going to affect you after that trip's over. But it was like, in the moment, you're just like, shit, how am I still functioning right now? And the fact that you knew everybody else around you was also feeling that, it just, it sets up this perfect storm to form bonding.
I think that I've struggled here in the past year or two with bonding without war, because for 18, 19 years, war was the pathway. I didn't need to go out and drink with or party with or hang out with my teammates. Like, we bonded because we were laying in a ditch together getting shot at, or
shitty conditions period. For days on end.
Yeah.
But you weren't the only one going through it. So you had other people that you could relate to and you could talk to about it. And yeah.
Yeah. And so, again, I think you're already answering that as to how you achieve that without war, right? Sebastian Junger wrote a book called War. He's written a couple books, another one called Tribe. And in both of those books, he talks about why men love war. It's not because we all enjoy shooting people. It's because of the bond created in the shittiest of times.
100%. I think we talked about this a little bit on the first episode I did with you, is I didn't join the Army for patriotic reasons. I wasn't anti-patriotic by any means. I grew up in a military household, but it wasn't a dream of mine to join the Army. What was a dream of mine was getting the fuck out of Indiana. And I was just bored in Indiana. And that's honestly, like, that's the depth of my why did you join the Army story. However, 6 months after I left for basic training, so I left in April of 04 for basic training. By October of 04, I was in Iraq. And that's when, you know, then I started to get more of that patriotic reasoning behind my service and the camaraderie. It was for the guys next to me. And that just grew over time because, you know, those early days, it was deployed 04, 05, 06, 07. 08, I was off. 2009 went to selection, Q course, and then back at it. And every piece of that, you know, even going through the Q course, like, there's bonding that goes on. There's camaraderie that's formed because you're going through some shitty times. Everything in your body is telling you, you shouldn't do this anymore. But you lean on the guys to your left and your right. And, you know, in other ways, that's when you really learn to trust yourself when you're going through your own personal struggles and you survive. You start to really see what you can take mentally and emotionally.
That's where you and I met, was in the Q course dealing with.
I didn't like you at all at first.
Yeah, we talked about that. I love that. I love that story, man. I do. I really love that story. I think it's actually
a great wrap-up of who I am. I appreciate that. I really do.
And, you know, the more over the years, because we've known each other now, 13 years?
50, oh, 13, yeah.
13 years? What were you going to say?
40 years.
40 years, about, yeah.
50 mass.
But I realized what I didn't like about you now, and I don't think I even realized this when we recorded the last podcast, but I've come to realize this in the last 6 months. It wasn't you that I didn't like. I didn't like your confidence. And I use the word confidence specifically over ego because that's what you were and I wasn't. And that's why you rubbed me the wrong way. You were confident in your ability and you were confident in yourself. And I wasn't at that time. And so I was envious that you had that. And you, it wasn't false confidence. You did know your shit and you proved it. And I, in turn, realized this is somebody I want to surround myself with. And that got to rub off on me throughout that course and into our careers afterwards.
Yeah, that means a lot, dude. I mean, that's like, I think the highest compliment you can ever receive, you know? So I really appreciate that. And I think that that's my own responsibility to understand that I do that sometimes to people, because obviously you didn't know that I also looked up to you, right? Like, here's this,
literally.
Yeah. Well, yeah, physically. I'm 4'4", dude.
On a good day with boots.
So being 4'4" is hard. I'm the only 4'4" Green Beret to ever exist.
Actually,
you're 4'6".
That dude in Vietnam who was a captain was legit like 4'11".
Yeah, so I'm shorter than him. And
by 7 inches.
I'm an official midget, but nah, man, I'm in the fives. I ain't gonna play. But no, but I looked up to you too, man, and that's the thing, you know. I've dealt with that my whole career. I'm dealing with it now. It's never going to end. But that's my fault as well, you know, and I need to be aware of that, and I try to be aware of that. But it's great to have it come full circle and to have a relationship with you like we have, bro. Like, I would do anything for you, and I know that you would do the same. So it's cool when it comes full circle, right? I mean, I think you said in the past, like, I'd show up to formation with, like...
all fucked up.
Yeah.
Like a visor.
Yep.
Flipped up on your head. The shortest shorts you've ever seen. Some Vibram Five Fingers, because those were cool back then.
Oh, you know.
And he would like go and find like the thickest book that Barnes & Noble sold just so he could carry it under his arm and look like he was smart. He'd like show up to formation with like a copy of Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah. And
no, he was actually reading those books.
Yeah, I was, you know, because that's just... That was me, man. I was the visor and the stupid outfit and the book. And I've always just unapologetically been me, which has caught me flack in the past. And that's okay, man. Like, that's kind of my life's commitment. And in fact, I think one day I might write a little something about how to find semi-success, because I think that I've found semi-success. I don't see myself as vastly successful by any means.
Shut up.
But I think I've found semi-success, and the cool thing about it is that I have maintained me the whole time, and I love that. And so I think I might tell some people how I did that, and it has been so hard, brother. It's been so hard. But I'll tell you, I think when I'm 70 years old, I'll sit back and be like, fuck yeah, dude.
Absolutely, man. I think that's what more people need to hear, because we live in a society now where everyone's kind of afraid to be themselves because they're afraid of offending someone else. And you've never been that way. Nothing you've ever stood for has been backed by hate or any foul intentions at all. But you have always spoken your mind. And you've unapologetically been yourself. And I think we're losing that in society and becoming what everyone around us wants to be. We're tiptoeing around subjects. And you were never that guy. You were ready to have a discussion, not a fight, but you were always ready to defend yourself through a discussion and your thought process. Sometimes might have been a fault.
Oh, no doubt. And, yeah. You know,
instructors didn't like that too much.
Instructors did not like that. But, you know, something that I tell people all the time is that you have to be able to bring competence behind your pushback. If you're going to push back, you better be competent, man. If you're not, you're going to be fucking crushed quick. Right. So you better be at least a semi bad motherfucker in order to push back. Right. And I've experienced times in my life where I push back more than I was a bad motherfucker. Right. And so it's a cool process. I've enjoyed it all. And I can really appreciate that. But I love hearing that from you, man, because I'm very much like a dog that I love. Dude, I just want. Just tell me I'm a good boy. Like, tell me I'm a good boy and I'll fucking go back out there, dude. And I'll grab that ball and bring it back to you. Like, I want to serve people, man. I want to serve the people that are important to me. Like, that, dude, I'm just here to serve. Seriously. That is, you telling me that is, that's the greatest satisfaction in life, dude. Seriously. And throw the ball again. I'll go get that shit, you know, and work my ass off for you. It means a lot to me. But to my original question, like, I think I also agree that camaraderie is built through hardship. it's a challenging thing in a post-war military, and it's a challenging thing in the civilian world. Obviously, you go to work at Google, you're not, you know, closing with and destroying the enemies of the United States of America.
Because I am the infantry.
So it's not... It's not there, right? So, you know, and I think that's part of the transition problem for a lot of people. It's like, hey, man, Zach or whomever respects me because if you know JD from 2013 or 2017 or 28, like any of these rotations, like, dude, that dude pursued combat with the enemy. And in like, I'm in for that. But how do you do that in a place where you just come to work and you're like, you know, working on TPS reports? Mm-hmm. You know, how do you build that relationship that's similar? Or do you? Is it a thing?
I think it is.
I've never had those jobs, so I don't.
I know.
I don't know.
I think it is. How?
I mean, I'm sure they work long hours and they have deadlines, they have stress, they feel. It's not, you know, you can't compare the two, being shot at or having to walk 30 miles, you know, 15 miles for an infill and 15 miles out for an exfill and assault an objective in the middle isn't the same as having 48 hours to finalize whatever website production or, you know, but they're staying up all night. They're exhausted. They're getting through it together as a group. I'm sure afterwards they go out and have drinks and tell stories about how hard it was to code whatever.
Yeah. And that is their personal struggle.
Yeah.
Like, I can contest to this in a different circumstances, different ways. Never been to war. We'll hopefully go to war. I'll find it. But that being said, please God. But I seriously mean that. But I think everything that we experience in life, it's all about perspective, you know. Trauma level is perspective. You know, anything we do, perspective. Everybody has a different perspective on everything, you know. But that being said, like, you know, I've worked construction jobs, 22-hour days, you know, working, building a deck. It's like, holy crap, what am I doing? That's that perspective. Like, yeah, it's not going to war, but it is. It's that camaraderie of like, yo, this sucks. You know,
yeah.
I've worked, it's a lot of it's been manual labor, but like, even you can put in finer details of like doing a group project in college. You know, it's like, yeah, we just worked this for like 12 hours straight, you know, working with other people. Like, yo, this daggone physics problem sucks because I don't know physics and my co-partner does, thank God. But it's like when I think it's human nature, maybe animalistic, like when we go through hard stuff, you know, it's not up to, I don't think it's up to other people to determine what is hard, because anything can be hard to certain people, you know. And I think, like, you know, playing rugby, playing a team sport, doing anything as a team, you'll witness that if you're in a team setting. When you do it by yourself, you realize it's on you where that struggle is at. You know, what is my limitations? 100%. What is hard on me? When you start relying on other people, it changes everything, you know. It's like, yo, I have to perform. I have to do my job. And some people fail at this, you know, because they don't care about being on a team. They don't care about other people. Dudes like us, yeah, we care a lot about other people. You know, we just – podcast we had 3 days ago all about serving other people, you know. That's what we're all about, you know. Helping other people is what gets us through life. And I'm a firm believer in that. I know JD is. I know you are. I know everybody in this room is. And that's how we find – I think that's how you find the connections. You know, JD's saying, how do I find that without war? Well, he'll find it. He's finding it now. Right now, sitting in this room, he's finding that camaraderie. He's finding it through the hero games. He's finding it through events that we do. It's like, hey, us going out in the woods tomorrow, sitting in the rain, getting rained on, it ain't nothing to us. But, hey, that, like, 10-year-old girl, 10-year-old boy, even that the parent of that kid is going to be like, yo, this fucking sucks. But they're going to realize, yo, I get to brag about this to my coworkers, my friends, my mom, my dad. They didn't do that shit. We did. Our 10-year-old kid did and didn't cry about it. And I think a lot of people are scared to put themselves in that situation because the hit on another note of, like, while you're talking about JD, like, you kind of saw things in him that you didn't like because you didn't see in yourself. I think a lot of us, I heard it from a Instagram reel, validity behind this. I'm no psychiatrist or anything like that, obviously. But I heard it. It was the things that we gripe most about people are the things that we know we can't do. Mm-hmm. The things that we struggle most about ourselves are the ones that we complain about or make fun about other people for. And, you know, I think that holds true because I know personally, you know, I'll make fun of people or I'll do something where I'm like, I know I can't perform in this level what this dude can do, so I'll make fun of him or whatever. But I try not to do that because that's some, you know, that's for the birds. But I think a lot of people do that where they're like, yo, why are you in SF? Why are you doing what you're doing? Why'd you go to 7 continents or 6 continents for disclaimer? But like, why'd you do that after you just were in the hospital for almost 2 years or around 2 years? Like, why'd you do that? You didn't need to do that. And I told Josh this. It's like, yeah, you're right. I'm doing it because you don't have to, you know? Like, it's a belief. It's a state of mind where collectively you see a lot in the military. You see a lot in manual labor jobs. You see it in teachers, you know? Mom's a teacher. My fiance's a teacher. My brother's a teacher. It's a different perspective of what we think is hard, but for them it is hard. They got to deal with kids all the time. Mm-hmm. That's why they form bonds. They feel that camaraderie that we're talking about. Like, hardships is what makes people closer. And as you can see in our society, like, I wrote a paper about this in college where it was like, it's called the American blessing and curse. We live in the greatest country of all time. Ever thought of, we live in it. Nothing is hard. We have so many opportunities. It is a double-edged sword of what the world can be, because anybody can be anything they want, but the way you make it is through other people. You have those hardships, you make it. And I think all of us can contest to this, but the microcosm of, like, going to war, yeah, that's the purest form in my belief of, like, yeah, I might die my buddy might die, or I might die if I don't do what I need to do. And people, and like I was referring to earlier, it's all about perspective. Like, you know, if I don't show up to my job on time, the job might not get complete, which screws my whole entire, the whole entire company I'm working for. And I think like people need to realize that like it's not just, it's not all, it's not, well, our saying for Hero Games, it's not about you. It's not, you know, it's about the people around you, because everyone in this room, everybody in this world, if you want to believe it, you can make a difference if you accept that fact that you can help somebody out. Don't make it about you. And I don't know. Like, I think all of us can agree upon that, but that, it's all about perspective. And I think everybody in this room has a different perspective on hardships, trauma. All of us have gone through it. We just have to accept the fact that we've gone through it and we can all help each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I don't know. It's a very tricky subject because it comes down to the open-mindedness.
Yeah.
And I'm a firm believer in that. Like, I know personally, like, somebody else's hardship, I can learn from it, but they can also learn from my hardship. And we can bond that way. And I think that's what you've done. The first podcast you did with us, that opened up the door for you to share your story. And it's obviously, it's paid dividends for you, but it also paid dividends for other people because they realize like, holy crap, this guy went through all this. My life is pretty damn good, but I'm able to realize now that I can get through it. I can get through it. I just have to accept the fact that I can get through it. He got through it, you know? And I don't know. That's just my opinion. Don't have to agree with it. But I think that's it's just a good point of view to have. It's not about you. It's about the other ones around you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I was just writing about this. I've been doing a lot of writing lately. I don't know what it'll turn into, but when I was in the hospital and the doctors came, like things had taken a turn for the worse, and they flew me across the country to another hospital because I had superseded all of the health care down here in Florida. And I got to that hospital and the doctors came in and they're like, look, we need to have a real talk. You're alive right now, but the way this is going, in a couple hours, you might not be. And it's going to be that fast if it turns. And so you need to make your peace with God. And all I could think about was, what will I leave behind if that happens? What's left? And I wasn't happy with the way I had to answer that question. Because a lot of things, you know, I had that camaraderie and that tribe, if you will, with guys that I went to war with, guys that I served in units with. But I didn't feel like I had really made an impact. And so I wondered, like, how many of those people would even show up at my funeral? Who will be there? What stories will they tell? How long will those stories live on for afterwards? And it wasn't that I wanted to go down in history, but I just wanted to feel like I had made an impact throughout my time here. I didn't feel like I had. And so when I woke up and I realized I was still alive, I decided that I was going to find a way to, the next time a doctor has to have that conversation with me, to be at peace with that. And so that's where we're at now, is just trying to create that impact. And so good, bad, and ugly, I'll tell you anything you want to know about my experience if it helps someone. And yeah, so that's what it is.
I talk to people all the time, especially my dudes at work, about leaving their mark. Like, when you leave this place, how will anyone know that you were here? And it's not about you, but if you didn't leave a mark, then what value were you? Right? So with that, I think the way that we leave our mark is exactly what you're saying, by impacting other people's lives in whatever manner. On the last podcast that we recorded that will be released here in about a month, we were sitting down with the guest and talking to him about how his actions impacted me and how I've carried what I saw him demonstrate, and I have shown that to others. And so that's him leaving his mark, just his actions alone. So I think that we can't discount that, right? We have to consider that our actions alone are leaving a mark, no doubt. Some of that is incidental. It's not intentional. I think we need to be intentional about how we're leaving our mark. I think we have to think about, as you've done, how am I going to actually leave my mark? I think it's like anything. You determine how you're going to do it, and then you execute. And it has to be systematic, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
But again, in the last podcast, we talked about happiness. I think happiness is one of the fundamental achievements in life. If you can achieve happiness, then you have found some level of success in life, because life is tough. If you can help other people achieve happiness, I believe that you transcend the position that you're in when you only achieve your own happiness. That's a whole nother level, dude.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's leaving your mark. I think that's all really important. I think leaving your mark is important. And I think the way you do that is by first finding your place, your purpose, your happiness. And then once you're settled there, or at least confident you have your roots in, then you can help other people find that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. There's a... This happened yesterday, 2 days ago. I got a card in the mail from someone whose path I crossed, and we didn't work together. We didn't spend a long point of time together, but we exchanged a lot of stories over a short period of time. And they sent me a card that was like, you open the card up, it was both pages, and then you flipped it over to the back of the card, and it was still continuing talking about how much I impacted them with just my attitude and my energy and my approach to life. And there's nothing more reassuring than when somebody who you respect sends you a card telling you that you had that impact on them. And yeah, the rest of my life, I just want to keep showing up that way to everybody around me that matters to me.
Something I remind myself of all the time is that people are watching me. People are watching you. So fucking act accordingly, dude.
Yeah.
Act accordingly, because they're watching all of those little moves.
Yep.
So fucking set the example. And then when you fall short, you know, tell yourself that you're a piece of shit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sincerely.
I 100% though believe, you know, people ask, like, somehow the word resilience keeps being thrown at me. And I don't know if I'm deserving of that title, because it's not like something that I set out to be. I didn't say, wake up one day and be like, I want to be the most resilient motherfucker. It's just, that's just the choices I made, I guess, led me down that path. And you know, a handful of what life dealt me also. But I just never, I won't say that I never became a victim to it, because I obviously, as we did talk about, I did have those low points, And so I did have that victim mentality. Why is this happening to me? I don't want to live anymore. But I never stayed in it for too long. And whether that was driven by pride or, but I was like, I just didn't, I didn't want to be a victim. So every time I was faced with something, I said, I'm going to find a way to come out better than I was before. Not just come out of it, but I'm going to find a way to come out stronger, maybe different, but I'm going to come out and I'm going to do some cool shit with my life still. This isn't going to be the end of it. And so resilience keeps coming my way. And so I started really diving into, okay, why do people keep telling me this? So first, Google, what is resilience? And, you know, I'm not Webster's dictionary, but essentially it's, you know, overcoming adversity or hardship, or the ability to overcome adversity. And so then I started diving in even deeper. What led to that? And, you know, on the surface, I thought, well, it was my time in the Army. It was going through selection, the Q course. Like, over time, that's what made me resilient. But it's really not that either. And so now I've kind of dialed it down to a few things that have led to my resilience. And it goes along with what you were saying. It's accepting where you are. So generally, when you start talking about resilience, it's because there's some sort of adversity that's happening. And to be resilient is, you got to figure out how to, if you want to be resilient, you got to figure out how to overcome that. And the first step is accepting that these are the circumstances, whether it's I'm in the hospital, I don't know if I'm going to walk again, or my marriage is failing, or whatever the case may be. You have to accept that this is what it is. And then you have to accept what led you there, whether it was your fault, someone else's fault. You got to be willing to own up to that. And you got to be vulnerable. And you got to be willing to do the work to get out of that. And that's where today a lot of people stop, is when it requires work. Because it's a lot easier to just accept an excuse for why you got there. And yeah, for me, what has led to my success in regards to resilience is I choose the people I surround myself with, and I make sure that the people I surround myself with have similar values and that they push me outside of my comfort zone. And so far, that if as long as I, like, I put everybody in my circle through those two criteria, and it hasn't led me wrong yet.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Two things my dad always told me was, it's I can show your future by the people you put yourself around, and never cast your pearls upon the swine and the dogs of the earth. That's it's very powerful statements right there. I know I wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't have a mom and dad that I had. But I also wouldn't be where I'm at today if I didn't see the poor examples that I've seen in my life, you know? A lot of poor examples, a lot of ways not to live life.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm grateful for those, you know? That is the reason I am the way I am today, is because of what I've seen in my life. But I've also seen a lot of good things. I am where I'm at today because of JD. I will admit that, and I will admit that till the day I die. He always has given me an example of what I want to be. Will I be better than that? It's up to me. You know what I mean? But, like, you know, hitting back on it again, it's that perspective. You know, you have to accept the fact that I don't think a lot of people accept the fact that what they're going through, can they can make it through it. You know, it's all up to you. It was up to you to get through what you got through. Like, and it comes down to the point of I think we were talking about earlier, the imposter syndrome. I don't think I should be any way, shape, or form where I'm at today. I struggle with that every day. I should not, in no way, shape, or form, given the circumstances, what I've grew up in, where I'm from, what I've been through, I should be where I'm at today. You, I'm guessing, feel the same way in the aspect of you shouldn't have just did what you just did because you were in the hospital for 2 years. You know what I mean? Like, and that's a struggle, I think, that trauma creates. A lot of people don't want to accept the fact that they can get through it. And you've gotten through it. And that's why, you know, you'll get through it. But it's a matter of, and I don't know if it's the PTSD factor of it. Because I don't know too much about it to like, well, I guess I've never personally accepted the fact that what I've been through, what you've been through, what JD's been through, what everybody's in this room been through. It's like, yeah, we've seen some stupid shit, done some stupid shit, been through a lot of stupid shit. It's like, man, I shouldn't be where I'm at today. And I struggle with that all the time. Like, I'm never good enough. I'm never good enough. I never will be good enough. My fiance, first time I ever heard imposter syndrome was by my fiance last week. She was like, you have imposter syndrome. I was like, what is that? Never even heard of it before. I looked it up. I was like, holy shit. You're 1,000% right. I do this to myself every single day. Like, I'm not supposed to be in this house I'm in right now. I shouldn't be driving the truck I'm in right now. I shouldn't be a GB. But you best believe I motherfucking am. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You best believe you're at where you're at because you fucking are. So it's like that resiliency factor that you talked about. Like, what is resiliency? Well, it's fucking defeating yourself, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think imposter syndrome is a nice check and balance for high performers. So just doing some quick research here, you know, I'm a fucking scientist. So I'm doing some quick research, obviously.
PhD.
Over here. And one of the things that I've discovered in the past 47 seconds is that imposter syndrome affects high performers predominantly. Makes sense to me. I don't think anyone's laying on their fucking grandma's couch in her basement, you know, playing Minecraft thinking like, oh, fuck, dude. Like,
how did I get here?
How do I... such a badass, like, look at me. People must think this isn't real.
I never thought I'd have this video game chair with built-in speakers yeah. behind me.
So it affects it got too personal there. I don't have a video game chair.
He's got two.
Never do that. Seriously, I don't. All right, clear the air. I don't have a fucking video game chair. That would be ridiculous. Now it sounds like I do. I don't, dude.
He's
play
denial.
Video games when I was a kid. Whatever, man. I can barely make my way around a video game nowadays. All right? I don't think that. My point is, it affects high performers, right? High performers with imposter syndrome think that they don't deserve to be where they are, to have achieved what they have achieved, etc. And so, but I actually think, again, it's a healthy balance as long as you don't let it overwhelm you or mm-hmm. consume you.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, because you have to have some humility too. If we all retired from being Green Berets and we continued to walk around the world like we're fucking untouchable, like that would get annoying too. And we'd probably be in jail or getting in fights every night.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I got stabbed once at a Kenny Chesney concert because I thought I was untouchable.
I know. You told us.
I fucking love Kenny Chesney.
I love that.
And, yeah, I learned what I can and can't get away with. But at that point in my time, prior to that incident happening, I was like, Bitch, I am 22 years old. I've deployed to Iraq twice. The fuck are you going to tell me?
And then you get stabbed in the ankle.
And then you get stabbed in the ankle for cutting somebody in line at a Kenny Chesney concert trying to use the bathroom.
Take that Achilles out, dude.
And I think there's, again, difference between ego and confidence.
Yeah. I heard somewhere, probably Instagram, like Willie as well, because Instagram's basically replaced my father and all my mentors in my life. Just kidding. That we should talk to ourselves. Our internal monologue should sound similar to how we talk to others, right? Oh, because we're pretty kind with others. But we're not kind with ourselves. I think that's a dangerous game. But a couple things you said I clung to. Choose the people that you're around. Another Instagram reel. Again, replace my father. I believe it was Will Smith. Or either him or the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I'm not sure which one.
Those are the same person.
What? He said that. He said, light yourself on fire and surround yourself people that are going to fan your flame, dude. Like, keep it burning. And remove anyone from your life that's not there to ensure that you keep fucking burning. And so I prescribe to that wholeheartedly.
We've had talks about this.
Deep talks, dude. And I live by it. And that doesn't mean that we don't show each other grace. We have to show each other grace because we're going to fuck up, right? I'm going to fuck up. I'm going to hurt the most important people in my life. No doubt about it. And I hope that they show me grace. But they're going to show me grace, or I expect they may, because they know that I'm here to fucking feed that fire, baby. When in my marriage, I feed the fire. In my work, I feed the fire. In this podcast with you, I want to feed your motherfucking fire, dude. And I want to feed your fire for the rest of our lives, bro. Because how could I not? How could I not feed your fire? So that's my mission, right? And that dials it all the way back to what Hero Games does and the whole reason that we're fucking here in the first place, dude. Just like for others, right? It's that service. So I really dig that shit. It's pretty fucking cool to me. And so I'm glad that I'm able to feed your fire in some manner. And I want to feed it more, dude.
Feed me.
The other thing that old Willie said was to cast your pearls at the feet of swine. Bible verse, right? Taking me back to my younger days in the Pentecostal church holding a baby snake running up and down the aisle. I'm just kidding. We didn't do that.
Speaking them tongues.
We didn't do that. But but Jordan Peterson says to be careful who you share good news with. Dude, I live by that. Because people who are working against you, they don't care about your good news, dude. They don't. And they don't deserve to hear your good news. So, again, surround yourself with people that are awesome and that want to hear your good news. I want to hear your good news, dude. And I want to tell you about my good news, too. You know, like that, those are the people that I want to keep around. So it's, man, we're getting older and we're starting to learn these life lessons. We're mm-hmm. becoming like semi wise.
Mm-hmm.
It's wild, huh?
There's a lot of knowledge to be gained through retrospect. Dude,
there's so much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So You got a lot out of 7X. You built some amazing relationships. You saw 6 continents. Again, you and I are going to see 8 continents in the future when we do the 8X project. I'm really stoked about that.
Yep. This is after Texas breaks off. From
whatever it takes to get 8X. Yeah. We're there. You know, find a way mm-hmm. type thing.
Mm-hmm. Elon Musk, if you're listening.
So, anything else to be said about 7X before we depart and move on?
I think that pretty much sums it up.
Cool.
Except thank you to everyone that was involved and impacted me and everyone that came out and supported us on each continent. You know, that was another really cool piece, is it wasn't just the people that were involved, but we had support on each continent that we stopped on. And it was great to get to talk to those people, you know. And I had some of our seventh group familia help support us down in Colombia, and London was amazing. We had a huge turnout of veterans and firefighters that came out to run with us, and we had an awesome dinner at the Royal Air Force Inn. I don't know what the hell
the Eiffel Tower.
What's that?
Eiffel Tower.
That was Paris, and we didn't go there. But it was like the Royal Air Force Club, dinner club. I don't know. I'm butchering that, and that's probably like I could get thrown in jail in London for fucking that up, probably.
London.
But it was awesome. And yeah, so the last thing I'm going to say about it is to everyone that was involved, no matter what the capacity, thank you. It impacted me. It motivated me. And I'm a better person because our paths cross.
I dig that, man. And I bet they would reciprocate that feeling. So you've had a pretty busy year. You knocked out the 7X project. And then within a week, you went to Saipan.
Yeah, literally turn and burn, basically. Got back. We had some events in Dallas over the next 2 days after we landed in Dallas. We did our athletes piece that day. Finished out, slept for the first time in like 10 days. And then had our big like culmination party the following night, which was awesome. Just really emotional night of everybody just kind of walking around the conference room of this hotel we were staying at, telling people how much they impacted them over the last 10 days. And, you know, there were some videos. So also so Ryan Parrott was the guy that came up with the 7X project, and he had a teammate on the SEAL teams who committed suicide, and that guy's wife and kids were there. And yeah, it was just really kind of brought it all home that this is why we did this, was to study recovery specifically, like with an emphasis on the mental health side, to try to stop that statistic with the veteran and first responder communities. So yeah, that was awesome. And then the next day drove home to Baton Rouge, basically did laundry and repacked my bags, and headed out to Saipan for 2.5 weeks on a joint recovery mission. It was split amongst archaeologists and soft veterans. And we were diving right along the edge of the Marianas Trench and searching. Well, we had specific wreckage sites that we were pre-designated and we had approval to excavate, but searching for U.S. remains amongst those wreckage sites so that we could bring them home and repatriate them.
Very cool. What organization was that with?
Task Force Dagger, which was also who I fundraised for when I rode a bicycle across the country in 2015.
Were they also involved in the Afghan withdrawal?
I don't know, 100%.
Yeah. I feel like they were. I'm not sure.
Fact check it. I mean, not right now, but.
True. So this was with Task Force Dagger. They reach out to you?
Yeah. Jeff Dardia, who works under the Human Performance World of USASOC, he reached out to me and asked if I'd be interested in it, and I said yeah, and they were like, cool, because we need somebody. So off I went. And yeah, again, great mission. It was really humbling to be a part of something like that. While we were there, we got to spend some time touring the island and really understanding what that time looked like for the people on Saipan, 1944, June 1944. And yeah, it was pretty wild because they were getting all this propaganda from Japan about how Americans were going to come there and ruin everything. And then we showed up and helped in a lot of ways. But prior to that, due to the Japanese propaganda, a lot of them committed suicide. Like thousands of them went and jumped off a cliff together. And it's called Suicide Cliff. I got a chance to go hike up there and see that. But yeah, we got to learn all about the history on the island. Then we got to be a part of this mission to bring people back home. We're not sure if we found anything yet. We sent some things back to be tested, but it'll be months before the lab gets back to us to tell us what it was. But it was awesome because we got to interface with the archaeological students, which to me, I thought that was really cool because they're like real life Indiana Jones. But to them, were really cool. And so it was just a really awesome dynamic. But from a veteran, from a soldier standpoint, it provided purpose and mission again, which I think is what a lot of us lack after we get out. And I think most of these people were medically retired or medically separated, or at some point, you know, Purple Heart recipients, and in some way they had experienced something throughout their military career, some sort of physical hardship. But it was, you know, everybody that was there is out of the military now. And so to be able to give them that purpose and mission, myself included, was really good, you know, because it still serves the veteran community because we're looking for MIA personnel. So it feels like we're still doing our part and we're around like-minded individuals. So all in all, it was just a really, really awesome trip. And it provided a really good filter coming down from the 7X project. And instead of going back into the day-to-day life at home, it was a good segue transition into what life looks like now, I guess.
Yeah, back to normalcy.
It's still not normal, but yeah.
Well, and also to see people caring about actions and people 80 years in the past.
Yeah.
It kind of makes you realize that your actions, when involved in war, are important to people.
Yeah. I've wondered about that a lot over like the last 2 years, like since Afghanistan shut down. You know, we saw after 9/11, there was this huge support for the troops. And that carried on for quite a while. And it started to kind of die out after, like, I don't know, 2000, like after 2010, it seemed like the hype for civilian support for the veterans, there was, you know, there's always been support, but it didn't have that same emphasis behind it that it did in like the early 2000s, like post 9/11. And I wondered, once Afghanistan shut down completely, I was like, how long is it before, you know, people forget about this? Because now, like, it's crazy. 21-year-old kids weren't alive,
bro,
for 9/11. So, like, they – and so, like, the meat and potatoes of the war and the conflict, like, they don't have any grasp on what that looks like. And, you know, that's – our young professionals of today now. And so I really wondered, like, where things were going to go. And that was just kind of a reassuring moment that 80 years later, we still have people that care enough to go try to find these veterans and repatriate them and bring them home to their families. So it gave me some hope for my friends and the community that I've been surrounded with for the last 20 years.
Yeah, when you remove politics from it all, the service is still admirable, right? So people respect that. Not everyone, and that's okay. But it is cool to see that people do respect that. And even 80 years later, to rally a crew, go to Saipan, and try to give back, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of a theme that we're talking about here for sure. You built some pretty good relationships during that trip as well.
Yeah, definitely. I've had a relationship with Task Force Dagger for 8 years now, and they have come in and out of my life multiple times. And so it was great to be back with them and doing things to help benefit their community. And then meet new people. So, yeah, the archaeological, some of them were students, some of them, like the dean of, and I might be misspeaking, but I think she was the dean of ECU, East Carolina University's Archaeological Department, or Maritime Archaeological Studies. But those people were awesome. And they had great stories to tell. They were super appreciative for us being there. You know, they're the scientists that are sifting through stuff, deciding what's important and what's not. We were more of the muscle under the water, working the dredge and moving stuff around. But yeah, it was great. It was, again, it was tiring because you're out on the water every day, and we were doing 2 to 3 dives per day. But then when you're not diving, you're just out in the middle of the ocean. So you're just getting the energy sucked out of you by the sun and the salt water and everything. So we're tired. But yeah, every night we all still went to dinner as a group, went out together as a group. So some good camaraderie was built. Definitely different dynamic than the 7X, but not better or worse, just different. But we all came together to accomplish a mission, and yeah, it was awesome. And then from the veteran side, it was great. I was, I think, one of the younger people on the trip. So it was, I think I was definitely probably the youngest from the soft community aspect. And it was cool because I got to hear some of those guys' experiences and then share with them mine, because some of them retired before 9/11. And so, yeah, it was just a lot of good storytelling, a lot of good, you know, oh, do you know so-and-so? That whole thing. Yeah.
For those out there who don't know the importance of Task Force Dagger, that were the horse soldiers, 574, who first went into Afghanistan, defeated the Taliban regime in, what, 36 days, give or take?
Something like that. That's where old Dardia came up with that.
Mm-hmm.
The name for that organization, does Jeff run that?
Jeff is, I believe, on the board.
Okay.
For, yeah. Task Force Dagger. Yeah.
I know Jeff Dardia from his briefs regarding operator syndrome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Really fantastic brief that I think every dude who fought in the GWAT should hear.
Mm-hmm.
Could definitely help you. Sounds like they're doing some really good stuff out there. Sounds like, you know, again, that was just part of your upswing. And so you know, you knocked out those two things, and you have some other things going on as well that, you know, we're not going to dive into tonight, but what is your future look like?
So we touched on this earlier that when I came out of the hospital and these opportunities started approaching me and people were like, wow, you've had multiple trials and you keep coming out stronger. I shared what that looked like. And then for a while, I felt like I was sitting stagnant, living through that. And I don't want to keep telling the same stories over and over. So for me, the future looks like continuing to create opportunities to test my own limits, find new limits, and impact others and create relationships along the way. I don't want to tell the same story twice. I want to keep creating new stories and keep having things to talk about.
Yeah, I dig that, dude. I have thought about that, how guys like you go from podcast to podcast or name your environment and have to tell the same story. I'm sure it becomes tiresome.
It was like twice for me.
Oh.
Like after like the second time, like I did yours and then I did one other and then it started to sink in that it was like, I don't want to tell this story a third time. I'm ready to have something new to talk about. And just so happened that the 7X project invited me along. And so that gave me something to talk about what I was training for. And now I'm talking about what the execution looked like. But yeah, I'm always looking for the next adventure. I'm always trying to find stuff to push me out of my comfort zone. So that way it doesn't look like the book's not done being written. So
yeah, and I mean, who wants to hear the same fucking story over and over? And you see a lot of people like living the rest of their lives off of things that happened in the past. So I love that outlook, man. Looking for the next thing. Dig that big time. So
I do want to throw a quick plug. So I do know one thing that's on the future. And that's the Hero Games, July 29th. Mm. And my boy JD has asked me to captain the first special operations team for the Hero Games. And we're about half full right now. So if anybody out there falls under the special operations umbrella, that's definitely on the tracker for things to complete this year. And I can't do it alone.
Just keep in mind, like, I'm trying to be a repeat champ on this. So
no way. Are you? Who's your team? There.
We'll figure it out.
You could be on the special operations team now. You qualify.
I'm a coach.
He said I'm a coach.
You now meet the criteria. You scared?
I made it last time, too.
Yeah, you did. That's right. Yeah, solid plug there. We support that. We support that plug.
I'm glad you support your.
We support the organization.
I'm going to plug something in there as well. I like those guys. They good boys. July 29th, honoring Staff Sergeant Jason Dawkey. Jason and I went to RIP together, the Ranger Indoctrination Program, in November and December of 2004. And then we went to 1st Ranger Battalion in January together. And Jason was killed in August of 2009, right before I departed for selection. And so we will be honoring Jason, and we're doing that through his Gold Star wife, Nikki, and his parents. So we'll be having them up in Virginia for almost a week surrounding the competition. At the competition, we'll have 5 teams comprised of local CrossFit gyms, and then we'll have a 6th team, which is a special operations team led by my man, Zacharias Gong.
Do you even know what my middle name is?
Zacharias Peter Puffer.
It's Scott. You were actually on the right track.
So, that team will be led by Zachary Scott Garner, former Sergeant First Class Special Forces. Anyway, we're pretty excited about that. Like Zach said, that team is about half full if you meet the criteria of former or current special operations. Then check out our website, sign up for the event, reach out to Zach. We can dive into how you can reach him on social media here in a minute as we start to close this bad boy out. But we're really excited about that. I'm hoping to see the soft team be rather competitive this year and keep those CrossFit folks on their toes. Nonetheless, if they don't, that's okay too. Because at the end of the day, this whole thing is about the Dawkey family, and that's what we're here for. So we're really excited about that. For you, you know, I think that as I push into retirement here in the, I would say, near future, I look to continue to surround myself with you and people like you. For me, there's no greater honor in life than to be able to close out a career and have built some really solid relationships along the way with people who I want to keep around and who want to keep me around. It's mutual. It's rad. We're super here for it. So I think in the future, we're going to build a center of survival excellence in Virginia. As we discussed prior to this podcast, we're also going to change the Virginia flag, or maybe that was at the beginning of the podcast. No one knows.
Two boobs.
Yeah. We have some issues with the Virginia flag and the nudity involved. First off, I'm not even sure that's a woman. Have you seen it? You don't want to see it.
I mean,
was it Sic Semper Tyrannis?
It's Sic Semper Tyrannis. Yeah.
Dang, I was close.
Or Tick Temper Tyrannis.
It's a check your temperature, you anus. Right?
That's exactly what it stands for.
I believe it means, so Sic Semper Tyrannis. Semper Fi means always faithful. I would say Sic Semper Tyrannis means always be stepping on them tyrants.
Just like Allen Iverson did over Tyronn Lue in the 2001 NBA Finals.
Yeah.
But my bad.
Thus always to tyrants.
Yeah, thus always to tyrants. So I guess sick means thus. Semper means always, and Tyrannus is tyrants. So thus always to tyrants, yeah. The flag is the female and her foot on a tyrant. So what were you thinking for the remodel of the flag?
Two boobs.
Free the nipple.
Yeah. And
modern.
Should like have that spear,
mm-hmm.
but like sticking through his head.
Oh,
make it a little bit more violent with more nudity.
Emotion.
More violence, more nudity.
I like it.
Yeah.
You get the point across.
You know, I get why. You want more boob because you were breastfed for 4 years.
Yeah, dude. It's not my fault. Blame my mom.
When you start to pull the string on these things, a lot of things make sense.
Yeah. Della did her best, all right?
Ooh. So let's close this out like this, dude. A little while ago, you were talking about yourself in the sense of like, I don't know, I kind of felt like you were saying you're not sure why people maybe value you or keep you around or reach out to you or whatever it is. And I'll tell you why. Because you're a rad motherfucker, dude. You're cool. You're funny. You're friendly. I don't know that I've ever met anyone that didn't like you. You know, when we brought you up for the Mountain Survival Challenge and Johnny and Ariel met you, they fucking love you, dude. Dude, Ariel loves you. You're awesome. You know, seriously, man.
She's the easiest person in the world to make laugh, though. So
she is, bro. Ariel and I are spirit animals together. Like, Johnny and I always say that we married ourselves. So Ariel and I are similar,
mm-hmm.
and he and Kayla are similar.
I could see that.
Yeah, dude. So because Johnny and I, we grew up tight, dude. We're bros, literally. And so we just wanted to marry each other, but that wasn't socially acceptable. Not in like a sexual way. We just wanted to be brother together husbands.
For life. Yeah.
Yeah.
If it makes you feel any better... My mom still asks about you.
Mm.
So,
see, so
she'll always have a special place in my heart.
I know.
Let me stay at the house. Yeah. In the backyard, in a tent,
in his own truck,
by myself. Just to be clear,
but still, he's stayed at my mom's house
for a week.
Hasn't left yet.
No, but that's why, man. Like, that's why people want you around. That's why people want you to go on the 7X and why people want to have you come out to Saipan because, dude, you're fun to be around. And you're a good dude. Like, and I talked about what I think being a good dude is last podcast and how in the community when people say, oh, he's a good dude, it's like, yeah, but
wouldn't want to work with him.
Exactly.
You hear that all the time.
Exactly, yeah. Bro. But I don't view that statement as such, man. I think when I say someone's a good dude, it means they're a man of character and someone that I actually want to be around. And if I want to be around you with beer or at a bar, then I want to fucking be around you at work, man. I'm not going to go have a beer with a douchebag. So anyway, man, what I'm saying is that just remember that, dude. You're a fucking rad dude.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate it, and it's mutual. I feel the same way about both JD and Willie. And, I mean, I don't ever laugh as hard as I do when I'm around you guys.
We're easily the two funniest dudes you ever meet.
Yeah, yeah.
And I will...
And possibly the best looking. So...
Not bad for two dudes that are literally 4'5".
And gingers.
I'm 4'4".
Yeah, I'm 4'6", he's 4'4".
But, no, I always love my time up here, man, and I try to just go through life and not take things too seriously except for the things that need to be taken seriously. And, again, it's just create impact and be the person that you want to be. Once you can identify that, then everything else just kind of falls into place. And you guys support who I want to be, so I'm going to keep showing up as long as you have me.
Hell yeah, dude. Same. I'll keep having you as long as you show up.
I'm here.
I'll keep having you in my house when JD invites you to my house.
Yeah.
But you better not show up uninvited.
Just kidding.
Yeah, man. All right, dude. Well, looks like it's about that time to end her. So, any final words?
No, thank you again. And just get out there and put yourself in an uncomfortable situation and get comfortable with it. Take a step. Step out of your comfort zone and don't focus on the finish line. Focus on the first checkpoint. And once you hit that, focus on the second checkpoint. Otherwise, you're going to overwhelm yourself. That's what I've done all along. Everything from surviving health issues to riding a bicycle across the country. Checkpoint to checkpoint. Just focus. Get to the end of the day. and then see what tomorrow brings.
Oh yeah, dude. Thank you, bro.
Thank you.